Chapter 9, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 1987 to 1988. In the waning days of my career with PhotoWorld, one of my employees gave me a business card for a headhunting firm in Cleveland. It had been meant for her husband, but he wasn't interested. I was, and made contact with the company a week later. The recruiter asked if I would consider relocating to Pittsburgh to be a district manager for a retail cookie company. I expected that managing retail cookie stores would be pretty much the same as managing one-hour photo stores. I was tired of my lowly job of transferring film to VHS in a windowless cell. I had had it with the heat and humidity of New Orleans. I wanted to be closer to family in Cleveland. I missed the four seasons that come with living in the North. I jumped at the chance. I was soon contacted by Todd from Cleveland, a zone manager for the original cookie company, based in Cleveland. Todd said he was going to be passing through New Orleans in the coming week and wanted to interview me at the airport. I must have impressed Todd because at the end of the interview, he asked me to take the next step in the hiring process, the personality integrity test. The test took 2 hours. It didn't even occur to me to fake the personality portion of the test. I am who I am. The integrity part was another story. For instance, in my work experience, I had done things to varying minor degrees. I had engaged in petty theft, condoms from Benfield's drugstore. I had also lied a few times to customers. "Sorry, Jack, it's not in my power to give you a free drink." To my fellow workers, "I thought Tom was supposed to take care of that." To my boss, "I don't see why we shouldn't be able to increase productivity by at least 50%. And to my employees, "Tom, I needed to cover for me while I visit another store." Would I ever have sex with an employee? Of course, if it's consensual. I mean, everyone does that, right? Instincts told me that if future employment depended on the answers to the integrity test, I should lie my ass off in the direction of eventual canonization. Here are some examples of these seemingly harmless questions. Is it okay to take a few supplies home with you, like a pencil or two? Yes, but nothing larger than a copy machine. If one of your employees is really grateful for something you have done, is it okay for that employee to give you a hug in the back room? Only if the employee is female and it will lead to something. If a customer accidentally overpays 50 cents and leaves before you have a chance to alert him, is it okay to keep the money? No. This is chump change. Hold out for 10s, 20s, and 50s. Actually, a resounding no to all these questions or any others with the same fishy odor is the correct answer. In short, I passed the test with flying colors and was hired within 2 weeks. The original cookie company paid for relocation. Within a couple of weeks, Ellen and I were comfortably ensconced in a small two-bedroom brick duplex in a hilly suburb of Pittsburgh. A few days later, I picked up my new company car at the Chevy dealership. Things were looking up. By now, I had been married a year. I knew we had a problem 6 months before I proposed. Of course, we still got married, but now married life was less than idyllic. This was not Ellen's fault. This was just another case of two people completely ill-suited to each other. We just made the mistake of waiting until we were married to confirm it. Fortunately, the new job required a lot of travel. I spent the first couple of weeks touring with my new boss, meeting managers and employees, and otherwise getting to know what the expectations and challenges were. I was pretty naive about the whole prospect. I wasn't apprehensive or intimidated by the fact that I was now responsible for 12 retail cookie stores in 4 states. This same lack of foreseeing impending doom was no doubt in play before both my marriages. As a reward for meeting annual sales goals, original cookie company employees, who included district and zone managers, enjoyed an all-expense-paid trip for a quasi-business meeting in an exotic location. Previous destinations included Aruba, St. Thomas, and the Bahamas. The year before I joined, the employees did not quite reach their sales goals. The consolation business meeting was held in Fort Lauderdale. By that time, I had been on the staff for a month, so I joined the 30 or so fellow district managers and upper echelon executives for a week-long trip to the Marriott Oceanfront Hotel for a week of fun in the sun. The morning of the first day, we all assembled in one of the conference rooms for the obligatory 20-minute meeting designed to justify this excursion. We went through the charade every morning and were then cut loose for the remainder of the day. My appreciation for the original cookie company was on the rise. As usual, if it weren't for the employees and customers, this would have been a great job. I was responsible for sales, maintaining management levels, and overall performance of the stores in West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Maryland. All our stores were in malls. The cookie product consisted of preformed frozen cookie dough, baked at predetermined temps and times. It was a simple, effective concept. Hour after hour, we produced a high-quality product, baked fresh before the customer's eyes and beautifully displayed. The aroma alone lured customers in, where they were served by equally fresh-looking, uniformed employees in an immaculate, colorful environment. What could go wrong? On a television program called Dirty Jobs, the star of the show takes on really tough, messy jobs for no other reason than to show the curious public what the experience might be like. The producers should consider a segment where the host is in charge of retail food employees and their managers. Anything you can think a human being might be capable of doing, short of killing, these employees did. Stealing large and small amounts of money, calling in sick when they were not sick, clocking in employees who weren't even at work, paying employees off the books with money that never made it into the cash register, enabling the manager to have someone working without it showing up on his payroll. Filling up empty cookie dough boxes with trash, and then storing them in the freezer to make it look like they were full. Stealing cash equal to what a full box of cookie dough would cost. And feeding family, friends, neighbors, and future and current girlfriends and boyfriends with as many cookies as they could consume. Another favorite, if a manager didn't show up, I would call him or her at home and ask if said delinquent would be at work that day. Some would say, no. Others might say, I'm not on the schedule, man. Debbie is. No, I would counter, you're supposed to be here. Oh, geez, I don't think I can make it, man. And that was the manager I was talking to. I had an ordained minister working for me as a manager in Maryland. This guy had his own half-price sale on the cookies for the last hour of the day. He even made up his own sign to display on the counter. The money he took in was tallied but never made it to the register. He'd use this money to pay for his employees for unreported overtime. He even had his employees trained to run the half-price sale when he was off and then deliver the money to his house. After a couple of months, the Reverend's losses were going beyond his allowed losses. Loss prevention stepped in and uncovered the unsavory plot. Since it would have cost more to prosecute His Holiness than what the total losses amounted to, we settled for canning him. I appreciated his inventiveness, but when confronted with a scam, he crumbled. What pissed me off the most was that I had to run his store until I found and trained a new manager. The guy I replaced him with wasn't as inventive, but just as big a thief. He was the son of a diplomat. This particular store was in Glen Burnie, Maryland, just a few miles outside the land of unimpeachable morality, Washington, D.C. My new manager's name was Hassan. He was a skinny little guy of obvious Middle Eastern descent. He was very smart and quick to smile. He was a charmer. In fact, he had just about everything I was looking for in a manager. At first, Hassan did fairly well. It only took me a week to get him up to speed. When I went to see him after he'd been running the store for a month, he presented me with a gift. It was a silver dollar and half-dollar mint set. Probably cost him around $25. I was so surprised and touched, in more ways than one, I accepted it. Of course, I should not have. During the same visit, I started to hear the other employees grumbling about how much time Hassan was taking off, how he wasn't showing up for work when he should have, and how he was committing a host of other managerial sins. Hassan and I had a little talk. He denied everything. I believed him. The following month, his losses began to exceed allowable limits. Once again, we brought in the loss prevention team, and Hassan also crumbled like a cookie. He crumbled even more quickly than the minister had. So here I was again, filling in at the store until I could find and train a new manager. I still have the coin set. It's a constant reminder to me that I cannot be bought, at least not that cheaply. One night I got a call from the mall security reporting that one of our managers had stayed in the store well past midnight. Naturally, I was pretty impressed with this manager's dedication. It far exceeded my expectations. It turned out he was sleeping on top of the walk-in freezer and had been doing so for the past week. A sad story, to be sure. His wife had thrown him out, and he had no place to go until he got a couple of paychecks under his belt. We didn't fire him. We also didn't let him sleep at the Cookie Motel anymore. I tried not to think about him bathing in the utility sink in the back room. My responsibilities included managing up to 14 stores. To my surprise, being on the road a lot did not help my marriage as much as I thought it would. Ellen and I divorced, and she moved back to New England. I was closing in on my second year of employment with the Cookie Company when I met my next wife at a national sales meeting. After a few months of flirting, letters, phone calls, and visits back and forth to each other's homes, my convoluted sense of logic told me that she must be the one. She was cute, smart, and funny. She had a nice figure, was goal-oriented and career-minded, and was shorter than I was. I loved her family, and they loved me. After a six-month courtship, we decided that I should quit the Cookie Company, move from Pittsburgh to Albany, New York, and set up house with her. She had just started the cookie job and did not want to quit. I felt I was invincible and could find work anywhere. I had enjoyed the company car, the travel, the expense account, staying in hotels, and eating cookies each time I went into a store. I liked strolling the malls and checking out the babes. On the flip side, I hated working weekends and even longer hours as each holiday approached. And I had had it with dipshit employees virtually controlling my life. I quit and moved to Albany to continue my courtship with Anne.